It's Monday. It's the Gavin Jules Show. We back, baby. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. And we'll be talking to Sid Lowe, Jules.
Yes, indeed, Gav.
Because there's a lot of stuff going on at
Loads
Barcelona.
Of stuff.
I'm super excited about Achraf Hakimi, but we'll get to that later. But we're going to start in England. The FA Cup.
Your favorite competition.
Let's just say sometimes I think the way it's scheduled on weekends, it takes away some momentum from the league when you're kind of excited to see who's going to finish in the Champions League spots and who's going to avoid relegation. It also means that we don't get to see Liverpool as champions.
Why?
Realize that? A whole week's going to pass between games for Liverpool. 8 days.
I know, but
I'll miss them. No, I'm kidding. Let's talk Chelsea, because this was a game that, on paper, should have been exciting. And I think in its own way was exciting.
Yeah, I think it was. Don't be too harsh.
They're playing Leicester City, right?
Yeah.
It's third v fourth in the Premier League. And yet, Frank Lampard, not a happy bunny at halftime.
Not happy at all. And I think rightly so, because that was a very poor first half from Chelsea. Having seen them play against Man City, for example, at Stamford Bridge, and he made a lot of changes. So, you know, it was not a B team, but it was like, not the strongest team that he could have put out, although it was a very good team. It just didn't click in that first half. I mean, Billy Gilmore, again, I think people need to realize, wonderful talent. Great, great kid. He works hard. From what I'm being told, he's very good at training. There is a difference between having one amazing game against Liverpool, against a Liverpool team that rotated a lot of players, that was not the strongest team maybe, and then doing it week after week, game after game for Billy Gilmore. For people who were saying, oh, when football was resuming, he's going to start every game, he's this, he's
but
that.
Who says this nonsense?
Loads of people said, and I'm all for young players to have a chance, and he will have a chance, he's having a chance, but you know, you saw him against Leicester, first 5 minutes, he loses two balls, two poor passes that went straight into his own box. And it's just like, okay, let's just not rush it. He's a great talent, and he's always been. He was the best in his generation when he was at Rangers and all of that. Great. It's just like, you can't rush those things. He will be ready one day. I don't think he's ready to play every single game for Chelsea now at that kind of level that we saw him against Liverpool, for example.
I wonder if Frank kind of saw this as like a motivational tool, right? Because there's always that thing with young players, and obviously he's promoted young players, and look, because it wasn't just him, it was Reece James, who, you know, I think is right now arguably one of the top 10 in the world in his position, but he's still very young, he's still very raw. It was Mason Mount, and it was Gilmore, all in one go. And I wonder if he just said, right, you know, I'm putting these guys out there against Leicester City. If they don't get it done in at halftime, and I can give them the whole speech about hard work, I want to show them. Maybe. I want to let them watch see the veterans the second half. Because look, if Leicester's finishing had been better, they could have been one or two goals to the good, right?
Mm. Definitely, and I think he made those changes at halftime, like you said. Again, no shame for Billy Gilmore to come off. Mason Mount, 12 touches in 45 minutes in the number 10 position. Come on.
Well, more broadly with Chelsea, is there an issue that they love the story of all the young players? But, and I've made this point before, but if you were to project forward, imagine Chelsea winning the Premier League or winning the Champions League. How many of these kids would be in the starting 11? Which ones?
I don't know. It depends. I think it's hard to predict how they will improve, but you could see Reece James.
But some of these you can see now, right? Mason Mount, we have enough of a body of work. Okay. He could improve tremendously all of a sudden, but he's got guys coming in his position.
Yeah.
I mean, Reece James, yes, obviously, right?
James, yes. I think
Hudson-Odoi, if he's ever fit.
Yeah.
Maybe.
I think Tammy Abraham has everything to be a very, very prolific striker, but I can also see him, and I've seen him against City, and maybe he was a bit rusty. And again, let's not forget they hadn't played for 3.5 months, so it's not easy. Like Reece James, first game he started, I think Mason Mount has played too much. He started every single game since the restart, and I just wondered in that first half if maybe he was a bit jaded of playing so much. Tammy Abraham, first start again, and so was Billy Gilmore. So I don't know, maybe that hasn't helped them. But I just maybe there's too many. Do you think we expect too much from them?
I think there's this idea that, you know, people love the story of young kids, and it's right to get to test them and give them a shot. And Chelsea have done a tremendous job. And by the way, this generation of Chelsea young players, of course, or youth team products, it also includes obviously others like Fikayo Tomori, who we haven't mentioned. It also includes Eddie Nketiah and Declan Rice, by the way. You know, all these guys came through together. The reality is, it's extremely rare to have a whole generation come through and make an actual contribution on a very good side. You know, even the, with all due respect, even the class of 92, a lot of that is marketing, because Ryan Giggs isn't really a part of that because he was already in the first team. Phil Neville was obviously younger than his brother. And then in the end, you're talking about four guys who were very, very good.
Yeah.
But it is kind of a once in a lifetime situation that you have people from the same generation like that. I think the club understand this. And I think he's using this as a testing ground. I would imagine several of these guys will be gone to raise money to, you know, for other signings like the ones that, that they're making this summer. But I want to ask you, when you project forward in your crystal ball in that Chelsea Champions League or Premier League winning side, is Christian Pulisic in the starting 11?
Yeah. I mean, listen, I was, again, at Stamford Bridge on Thursday for the City game. And it was the first, I mean, it was the first game at the Bridge. I didn't know where we were set. I was sat there for French TV, so with the right holders. And we were really close to the bench, literally behind it. So you could hear everything. It was great. And I could see Pulisic in the first half. He was on my side. So, I mean, so close. It was brilliant. He was amazing. Every first touch, every first 2 yards on the ball, just the energy and the speed and everything he was doing. And Lampard, I thought, was really good, kept encouraging him, kept talking to him, and Jody Morris as well. And I was really amazed. I promise you. And I just think that at his age, he has such a high ceiling. If there's a ceiling, even, because I think he has so much potential if he stays fit that he can easily start for that team and not just start, but have an impact, you know, every game or pretty much every game, because the goal he scored is fantastic. He created so much before that. Yeah, I think he needs to build up his fitness in, so he can last for longer at that kind of pace and
he looked
stuff.
Bigger too, didn't he?
He looks strong. He looks so strong. And I don't know, he looks so positive, everything he was doing. And I kept looking at him simply because he was on my side of the pitch, so I could see him so well. And in his repositioning when they lost the ball, everything, he looked so mature. And I was like, wow. And I know he got injured at the start of the season and then again in January, and that sort of hampered him. And he had that very good period, wasn't it, where he scored the hat trick and all of that. But I was like, wow. And they kept, I mean, Lampard, especially, again, I can't stress it enough, but he kept saying like, Chris this and Chris that and Chris, well done, Chris, and Chris and Chris and Chris. And he was just like, wow. And I don't know. I think he has an amazing future, but again, he needs to stay fit. But in my crystal ball, I see him being a very important part in that team for sure.
Give me some more crystal ball. Who's finishing third?
Chelsea. I told you already. I think Leicester will miss out. I've said
miss out on the Champions League entirely.
They will finish fifth.
Well, fifth might still get you in with Manchester City.
Right. They will finish outside of the four. They finish with United and Spurs, Leicester. The last two games of the season, United and Spurs.
Spurs' season could be over by that point.
Yeah, or not. And then you're in big trouble. I don't know. They had a very good first half against Chelsea, but I'm worried about Vardy because, I don't know, the ball used to fall for him in the first half of the season. He doesn't anymore. I think Tielemans, again, maybe simply the fact that they're coming back from a long break like everybody else, and they, because of the way they play, it's what we're saying, bowlers against grafters. Maybe they will take a bit more time. I don't see the fluidity again. And I don't know, it's a simple goal they concede. It's a really simple goal. It was a simple goal against Watford. They conceded again. And I don't know. There's something that I think is a bit missing. They might get it back and they get the mojo back, but I don't know.
FA Cup semi-finals, basically London against Manchester, right? Chelsea against Manchester United and, Arsenal against City. I know it's tricky to project forward and whatever, but I'm wondering, out of those four teams, Who do you think needs the FA Cup the most?
Arsenal, for sure. I think Arsenal, for sure.
To give Arteta some credibility.
Yeah, I think to get some momentum in a club that needs it. I think to make sure they qualify for Europe. Because
those FA Cups did wonders for Wenger, didn't
it? It's not so much that. You know what I mean? I see your point.
No, it's a great point. They need to get into Europe.
Yeah.
Right?
And that's the only,
I wonder, do you remember all that nonsense with the pay cuts and the bonuses if we get back into Europe, blah, blah, blah? Does winning the FA Cup do it?
Oh, yeah, you qualify for Europa League.
All right.
So
okay.
I wasn't sure how they... Instead of 12 and a half, it goes down to 7.5.
It's absurd. Absurd.
But you could argue, that Lampard needs it, first season a trophy and a top four finish.
Oh my God, he does not need it.
No, listen to me.
Do you remember earlier this season, all those people, oh, Chelsea losing too many games away from home and or at home or whatever the hell. Oh!
It doesn't matter.
They were out playing everybody. I mean, honestly.
It doesn't matter. A trophy would be great. Top four would be fantastic.
Of course, it would be great for everybody, yeah.
Yeah, so I think it needs that.
Does Pep need one?
I mean, I loved his line the other day about, we've won 8 of the last 10 trophies that you could win in England. So I guess he would want to make it 9 out of 11. Does he need it?
United?
I think that again, similar dynamic for Solskjaer to Lampard, you take it.
But I think with Solskjaer, and I know he's been up, he's been down, whatever, we've been critical, but I think if you go back and you consider what they did in the summer, the amount of salaries that they dumped, the fact that, you know, of course they got a lift with Bruno Fernandes, but the fact that they were without Pogba for most of the season, you know, in the end you added Maguire, with all due respect, you added Maguire, Daniel James, and Aaron Wan-Bissaka last summer. And you lost players, and Pogba was out for the whole season. I think for him, getting top four would actually probably be more important, or getting into the Champions League would be more important than winning an FA Cup.
Yeah, you're right.
All right, as fantastic as the FA Cup, the oldest club competition in the world is, let's move on to Barcelona, which of course is Més que un club, right?
Més que un club, yeah.
Exactly. So, who better than Sid Lowe to discuss this with, right? Since Sam Marsden and Moises Llorenç aren't available this morning.
Yeah.
Just kidding. We've hurt Sid's feelings, look.
Oh, no. He won't come back because of you.
I don't know. Welcome, Sid. All right, let's go with Barcelona because it really is no laughing matter.
I don't know. If you're a Real Madrid fan, it's probably a laughing matter, isn't it?
Yeah. Yes. If you're an Espanol fan as well, it's laughing matter.
Okay, listen, just because you guys hate Barcelona, please, I invite you both to
be
objective, okay?
That's not true.
I thought there were mini steps of progress, actually, for much of the game against a much better opponent, like Celta. And then...
Tell me, what was?
Luis Suarez gets back on the score sheet. I thought they moved the ball a little bit better in midfield. I thought they were better until Griezmann came on. Right?
I mean, well, Ricky Puig starting was a big difference.
Ricky Puig was a big part of it.
Yeah.
I mean, so am I wrong, Sid?
Come on, it was not that great, Sid.
No, but I think the first half was possibly the best first half we've seen. Maybe the best first half we've seen under Kikis at the end.
Thank you. Oh,
let him finish.
Yeah, you do exactly. This is a thing. There is a very big but coming up here, and we're not talking about Luis Suarez on this particular occasion. There's you know, the first half I thought was good. I thought they were good until they conceded the first goal to Celta. And then in particular, when they started making the changes, I thought they collapsed. And so, for example, while it is true that Celta obviously get the equaliser late on because of a free kick that's been kind of questioned a little bit, whether Rafinha was really fouled because it's a brilliant free kick, that Griezmann moves in the wall, all that stuff is true. But it's also true that for the last 15 minutes, it was coming. And all right, maybe 15, 20 minutes isn't enough to totally throw out a reasonable Barcelona performance until then. But for the last 15, 20 minutes, Celta just walked through that Barca midfield. They created chance. They created a lot of chances. It was far too easy for them. Rafinha was, I'm not sure if I'm supposed to use this phrase on a family podcast like this. Rafinha was extracting the urine, from the Barca midfield. It was, I thought the last 20 minutes from Barcelona were embarrassing. I thought they played well for about an hour, but I thought the last 20 minutes or so were embarrassing. I thought they fell apart really easily. And also you have to look at the broader picture here, which is that this season away from home, Barcelona have gone away and won at Atletico Madrid, which is a really good result, a very late moment of brilliance from Messi, I think in the 90th minute. They went away to Getafe and won, which is a very good result. But apart from that, their only away wins are against the teams in 13th, 17th, 18th and 19th. They do not win away from home against anyone good, apart from, as I say, that.
But that's the whole season. So that's with two different managers. So, like, we blame all the bad stuff on Valverde before.
No, well, that's that's part of the point, isn't it? That, of course, you look at that, and as I've said, there's two genuinely good away results, and those are Getafe and Atletico, and they're both with Valverde, as I said, the end. There isn't a progress in that sense. Of course, there's a shift in style. Of course, there are some things that Setien is doing. But I think more than looking at this in terms of where we blame Valverde or Setien, I think what this should really do is reinforce what we've been saying all the way through, which is this wasn't an issue of Valverde, at least not an issue of only Valverde. This is a club that has got horrible problems running all the way through it, which are explained by the Arthur deal, which are explained by a whole load of other factors. And you know, the in a way, the miracle is that they were even in a position where they could have won the league, or still are in a position where they could theoretically still win the league.
Well, we'll get to Arthur in a minute and what's going on there. But, I mean, there is one lens through which to view this and to say that, you know, Messi, especially in the second half, didn't perform heroics. And we're back to the whole Messi dependency thing. When he's just normal, and I thought he was pretty ordinary.
Yeah.
Maybe normal by Messi standards. I mean, I don't know if you agree, Sid, but certainly wasn't heroic in carrying the team. And when Messi is normal, then all the other flaws appear more serious. There's no papering over cracks. There's no snatching results. I foolishly thought that Luis Suarez could impersonate Messi for a day by scoring two goals and all of a sudden, you know, but no, that didn't happen either. And again, also because I thought Celta were really good, but I'm very motivated in this game. Is it as simple as that? And can you also talk us through what happened, if we're going to talk Messi, what happened during that last drinks break that a lot of people have focused on?
Yeah, I mean, look, is it as simple as that? Is anything ever as simple as that? And so the answer is no. But of course, Messi, and I say this with a heavy heart, with a sense of the absurdness of what I'm saying. But of course, Messi is a problem at Barcelona in some ways because of that dependency upon him, because of the way that, you know, we saw it. I think we saw it more in the two previous games, the determination of Barcelona's players try and give the ball to Messi all the time, even when there are other players in better positions. The fact that if it doesn't go through Messi, not very much happens. And actually, in terms of the result, Luis Suarez did step up this time. He scored two goals, which should have been enough for them to win this. You know, it shouldn't have mattered. And Messi did one moment of genius, because I genuinely think that free kick in the first half is absolutely brilliant, from which Suarez scores the first goal. But this is an ongoing problem. And this asks all sorts of questions about the kind of players they've got, the structure they've got, how they build the team, the damage that was done by the departure of Neymar, the personality vacuum of other players, perhaps because of the dominance of the personality of Messi. I think what this also does, and again, as I say, it's not that simple, which is why I'm now talking for much longer than you probably want me to, but it also does, it asks that question about just how good has Messi been over the last 5 years, because it feels at times like he's carrying a team, and yet he sort of isn't, because this is a team full of really good players. And this is a team that, when he hasn't been there, has sometimes risen to the occasion. You know, the 5-1 against Real Madrid in the Clásico, I think it was a 4-0 against Real Madrid in the Clásico, two results that they picked up without him, when they went on really good runs without him. But they're so wedded to him now that the loading of responsibility onto his shoulders is really, really problematic. The question is, how much of that is down to him? How much of that is down to structure? And look, I've said this lots of times before, but I'm going to say it once more. I think it was the summer of 2014. Ter Stegen, Luis Suarez and Ivan Rakitic came. I don't think since 2014 they've signed a single player who is an unqualified success. 5 years now.
Longley?
Is Longley an unqualified success? I mean, sort of steady, I mean, but not particularly spectacular.
But that's what they signed him for.
Who, by the way, when it came to the really big day at Anfield, was found wanting. I use the word unqualified because there are players in there who have played well, but I don't think there's a player that you go, wow, what a great signing that was in 5 years.
All right, I'm going to ask you about the Archer Pjanic deal in a minute, but first they have a big game coming up against Atletico Madrid on Tuesday night.
Yeah.
Atleti have won every game since the restart. We were all so excited by the 5-0 and then, you know,
against
it's been
Osasuna, but three goals. But it was Osasuna and then.
Yeah, 3 goals by 1 goal margin. It's just a brief detour on Atleti. They beat Alaves 2-1, they went 2-0 up, but the second goal, the one which ultimately was the site, was the game winner for them, is that penalty, Marcos Llorente, and I think it was Rodrigo Elli, that wasn't really a penalty, was it?
I don't have the words for this, Gab. I don't have the words to express how awful this is, right? Now, I don't mind referees making bad decisions, but if you've got a VAR, I think we have a really big problem, which is I think that what VAR is doing, and you know, I forgive me for turning a concrete question, which is whether or not this is a penalty, into a conceptual debate. I think what VAR is doing is VAR is making football, reducing football to technicalities and losing the essence of what the game itself is. And so what will happen is, I think, and this is, I say this because I've seen the discussions in the media over this, could this be a penalty or not? People are saying, well, there was contact. It's absolutely not a penalty. I mean, it's laughable that it's given. So I don't want to turn what is a concrete question as to whether or not this is a penalty, which it absolutely isn't, into a conceptual one. But I think there is a more conceptual debate here. And this is that I think that the VAR and the way that because bear in mind, it's not the machine itself that's the problem, although the machine itself clearly has one or two flaws, things like offsides, which don't seem to be entirely clear and so on. But it's the application of it. It's the protocol. It's the people managing it and all the rest of it. I think that goes without saying, but it's amazing how often people on Twitter say to me, it's not the VAR, you know, it's the people doing it. Well, of course it's the people doing it. I mean, it's like, the man who drives his car into a tree. I'm not blaming the car. I'm blaming the idiot at the wheel. Anyway, that's by the by. I think my problem with this is that I think it's reducing football to technicalities and to freeze frames and losing the essence of the game itself. And I think what's happening is that, and one good example of this is that I had the hope that one of the things that VAR would do is it would stop people diving. And I think actually the opposite is happening. Because I think players now know that if they can go into the penalty area and provoke a contact anywhere, the VAR will look at it and go, oh, look, there's the contact. Penalty. And I think it is the way it is at the moment, and I apologise because I started ranting now and I don't mean to, I would ditch it. I don't think we are getting big enough improvements in justice to justify all the other nonsense. And also, I accept that I say this as someone who of course, look, part of the reason is that we forget the good things we're getting from it because we start taking them for granted. But I'm not sure, I'm genuinely not sure it's worth it.
So that's not going to happen. I mean, Sid can start a petition, but that's not going to happen.
No, it's...
Where I'm really disappointed.
I could start petitions for all sorts of things.
But so we talked about the Real Madrid controversy and the calls they got. I don't think it's a foul on Rafinha in the Celta game against Barcelona. I don't think that should have been a free kick. And yet,
that's not in the VAR protocol, is it?
No, it's
VAR
not.
Does not change free kicks.
But overall, the refereeing situation in Spain, I really find it baffling. I promise you, Sid, and I don't know if it's because the referee think, well, we've got VAR behind us, so we can, you know, if we make a mistake, it doesn't matter so much because they will correct us or whatever. But that penalty, I mean, and that penalty for Atletico Madrid is just like...
Well, Jules, you raise an interesting question because I think one of the things that's happening with VAR is obviously it's changing the way that referees referee. And I had this discussion with Graham Hunter a couple of weeks ago, about a week ago, in fact, where he was praising a referee for having the personality to take a decision himself and not go to the VAR and not ask the VAR because it was something that happened right in front of him. And of course, the referee sees it in real time. He sees a real action in the game rather than a slowed down version of a freeze frame, which is totally denaturalizing the game. Now, for what it's worth, I disagree with Graham in terms of the decision that was taken by the referee, but totally agree in terms of the personality. But I think what's happening is I agree with you. I think a lot of referees thinking, well, I'll hold back because the VAR will then tell me. The flaw in that plan is the VAR is now not telling them. There seems to be this curious sense of whoever's in the VAR room thinking, I don't want to delegitimize the referee here, so I'm not going to tell him he's wrong. It almost feels like they're watching the image to see if they can justify the decision in any way, and if they can, fine, we'll leave it where it is.
Okay, this is year 2 VAR in Spain, if I'm not mistaken, right?
It's a different system this year than last year, though. It's genuinely changed this year.
But I think, I mean, I've said this many times, I'm repeating myself, but I think what we need to know, because there is a way to avoid these situations, or there's an intent behind it, and what should have happened here is the VAR should have told the referee what actually happened in terms of the contact. The VAR, who is a referee himself, would have said, just so you know, the contact that you see happens because Marcos Llorente tried to take evasive action, or he left his leg dragging and whatever. And then the referee might say, oh, really? Oh, I didn't see that from my vantage point. And let me take another look at it. And, you know, I think as long as we don't know the conversations between the VAR and the referee, it's really difficult to know where the quote unquote mistake happened. But we all agree it was a mistake. We've talked about this for, it feels weeks, but Artur and Pjanic, the swap deal is finally done. It's essentially, it's Pjanic plus 10 million going one way, and Artur going the other way. Now, Jules and I don't really like this deal from a Barcelona perspective. It's
don't
fair
get
to
it.
Say.
Just don't get it.
We think this is kind of purely accounting sleight of hand, and not even sleight of hand. I mean, those are accounting rules, so it's legit, but magicking money out of nowhere that non-accountants understand. Is there a footballing reason why Pjanic is there?
Right. Look, I'm going to try and keep this brief, okay? Because it's quite difficult to keep it brief, because as you say, there are all these complexities. And I think you've put it dead right there, Gab. This is an accounting issue, and it's a way of magicking money out of nowhere. But by the way, it's a way of magicking money that's not real. It's a way of magicking money on a balance sheet, but not in real life. The real money moving is only about 10 million euros.
Which is cash, and that's good.
Yeah, but it's 10 million euros and it's not enough. It doesn't mean anything, really, at this stage, or it doesn't mean very much at this stage. The real money is the balance in the books before the 1st of July. This is the key. And this is about protecting the directors of Barcelona. It's not even about just balancing the books for this year. It's about making sure you balance the books for this year so that the directors are not personally liable. So this is protecting themselves, right? This is protecting themselves. It's not even protecting the club, because this book balancing problem will reemerge next year. But it's about getting through each hurdle. And we'll cross the next bridge when we get to it. It's about self-preservation. That's what's really driven this. And this is why, in answer to your question, is there a footballing reason? It's possible that there are some footballing reasons. It's possible that there are some, but they're not what's driven this, which is why, and I bow to you two on this, because I don't know anything like as much about Pjanic as either of you two do. This is why I think the fundamental short version of the answer here is, and I was writing about this for ESPN the other day, actually, is that imagine this deal, from Barcelona's point of view, works out perfectly, right? Absolutely perfectly. Imagine it's the perfect scenario. Pjanic is brilliant for Barcelona. Arthur goes to Juventus, is an awful, right? It's still the wrong deal, because even if it's the right deal, it's been done for the wrong reasons. This is the wrong deal, and it's been done for the wrong reasons, and it's been driven by a motivation to rescue board members, not to try and win things. And in that sense, I think it's completely indefensible.
I'm sure Pjanic would be delighted to know that, actually. Do you know what? We needed to find someone that could come. And then it's you.
Well,
so
Jules, you know, next year it's going to be Arturo Vidal for Raja Nainggolan.
Yeah,
and they can do the same
like
deal
that.
There. And, you know, why not?
But this is what I mean. So even, as I say, even if this turns out in footballing terms to be a brilliant deal, right? Let's say, for argument's sake, Pjanic is the best player in Spain for the next 5 years, right? It was still done for the wrong reasons. I can't remember whose quote it was, but there's a. I mean, this is going off on a bit of a tangent, but let's go for it. There's a quote about the Second World War, and I think, I'm not sure who it's from. I think it's from a Labour politician in the UK, which was right war, wrong reasons. And this, even if this turns out to be the right deal, it was for the wrong reasons.
Well, there you go, Sid. On that note, we're going to let you go. Enjoy the big build up to the Barça Atleti deal. All right, as wonderful as Sid was, here's something even better.
Yeah.
It's time for some quick hits.
Let's go, guys.
Manchester United are through to the semi-final of the FA Cup, as we said, but Jules, they had to huff and puff to get past Norwich in extra time when they called in the big guns.
Yes, you're right, and Harry Maguire scoring very, very late in extra time to avoid going to penalties as well. They had some good moments, I thought, in that game where they controlled it well, created chances, didn't take them. And then Todd Cantwell scored a good way. I thought Romero could have done a bit better. And then it was all like, okay, now we need to bring the big boys on. Like Pogba came on, Martial came on as well, to win it. But I still think for the dynamic, nice. I think it's 14 in a row now without a defeat in all competition. That was obviously very, very positive. And then they can go back onto the league now and be really focused. But it was good for Pogba to get a few more minutes as well in that sort of context too. So, all in all, little scare, but still, I think, a very positive night.
Got to be satisfying that Tony Marshall is now included amongst the big guns with Rashford and Pogba.
Yeah. Manchester City are also through, again, as we mentioned a bit earlier, though they had an easier job dispatching Newcastle 2-0. Gab, anything to read in the fact that Guardiola, again, said before the game that he won't commit to the club beyond 2021 when his contract expires?
Yeah, just read the fact that the dude's being honest. He has no reason whatsoever to go and extend his deal with Manchester City. I don't even know if Manchester City have actually...
They would want to keep him, right?
I'm sure they would want to keep him, but, you know, you've got the threat of the ban. Yeah. You've got the fact that he's, you know, by 2021, he will have been there far longer than anywhere else. And, no, he's going to make his decision down the road. I think he's earned the right to make his decision down the road. Real Madrid make it 5 wins out of 5 against Espanyol. But Jules, I know you're going to want to talk about your boy Benzema, even though he's not from Paris.
He's not from Paris, but which is a shame. But it could be. You know, from Lyon, and I forgive him for that. But there's just, that's the only thing to talk about in that game. The incredible assist. If you haven't seen it, go and check it out. It's pretty much everywhere in the world right now, where it's a long ball and it's flicked by Sergio Ramos, and then Benzema on the sort of right-hand side of the box, inside the box, sees Casemiro making a run behind him and backheels the ball between the leg of Espinosa.
Guti style.
Guti's even better than Guti, because Guti was good, but he was very central. But there was just nothing else for Benzema to do, and it's a pure moment of genius, absolutely brilliant. I just think Benzema, who turned 33 in December, at the end of December, by the way, is just getting better and better. Best player in La Liga for me this season, without a doubt. Better than Messi, better than Valverde, better than anyone else, Ter Stegen, Oblak, whoever you want it to be. And that, for me, that just sums it up.
All right, asked me this last night. I'm going to ask you, given that the Bundesliga and Ligue 1 are over, is there a better center forward among the leagues that are playing right now?
I don't think so. And even,
he's playing
even
better?
No, and even when the Bundesliga and Ligue 1 were on...
Oh, you'd still take Benzema over Lewandowski.
So, okay, hear me out.
Over Mbappe.
No, hear me out. Uh-huh. Okay, yeah. Maybe not. But Lewandowski doesn't do that back heel. But Lewandowski is a different style of striker. He's a different style of striker. He would not get you the assist. And Benzema on Spanish television after the game on Sunday night, he said, I love that as well. I love giving that kind of assist. You know, he came to me, didn't have to think about it. Lewandowski would have maybe tried to hit it after the bounce. I don't know, something like that. They're different strikers. But I just think that what Benzema offers you in a game like this, where maybe you're not at your best when you're Real Madrid, It's just priceless. I think it's incredible.
I think he's one of the most complex and interesting guys out there. Yeah. Because on the one hand, you think about becoming a superstar so young, and then the sex tape, and then this and that.
Yeah.
And you think, oh my God, this guy's kind of a fool. He's going to throw away his career. And then you look at the flip side, and he's still progressing, almost improving as a player into his 30s. Tremendous.
No, it's incredible. It's incredible. Talking of an assist, let's talk about another one as well, Gab. Santi Cazorla is 35 now. He was out injured for nearly 2 years. People even thought he could not walk again, let alone play football. And he went through 8 operations on his Achilles, and now he's starring for Villarreal, who beat Valencia 2-0 this weekend in the derby. And he has 8 goals and 8 assists, and one of them being an absolute, again, moment of genius on Saturday. And he's also back with the national team. He would have gone to the Euros had they happened this summer. This is a fairy tale, right? This is incredible. We've talked about it before on the show, but...
But you can never show Casola too much love. Apart from the fact that he's a very likable guy, he's one of the good guys. I think this is tremendous, and this tells you that, A, from a medical perspective, I think there's a lot of things that were probably screwed up in the treatment he received initially.
Yeah, for sure.
But the perseverance to come back, and the fact that, you know, you don't lose your technical ability, you don't lose your vision, You don't lose your hunger, your desire to get yourself back fit again. Not everybody has the luxury of, no, of a second chance, but he does, and he's a class act. And he kind of proves the fact that your mind is quicker than your feet, and it doesn't matter if you can do that.
And such an intelligent player as well. And I tweeted after the Benzema assist saying that we've had the best two assists all league put together, this included this season, because I think the Benzema back heel and the Cazorla, again, if you haven't seen it, go and check it out. Cushion, first touch assist for Moreno, who then volleys the ball from an Asensio. I mean, it's just fantastic.
I might want to send Luis Alberto around your house with his highlight reel to ask, no, hey, can I've I be seen, part seen, of, no, can I be part of the like game?
You, but a few people on Twitter said, oh, have you seen every single goal scored by Inter? No, I haven't. Okay.
All right.
I can tell you, to beat those two, whether that's Luis Alberto, someone said Pablo Hernandez with, against Stoke with Leeds. Yeah, I get that one as well.
But you like this.
To beat those.
I got it.
Okay.
Arsenal. Santi Cazorla's old team make life difficult for themselves. There's a change towards the end, but eventually they beat Sheffield United to advance to the FA Cup semi-final, 2-1. Jules, the glass is half full, right? And what about all these Guendouzi rumors? You're laughing. Does it mean they're not true? Your boy Guendouzi?
No, I'm not laughing. So half full, of course, you take it. It's a win. They show character when, well, everybody thought that Sheffield scored late and it was going to go to extra time, and no, they found some sort of resilience there to come back, and Dani Ceballos scoring goal with Dean Anderson, by the way. Won't want to see that one again. But listen, you take that. It's a positive again. It's two wins in a row. You play Norwich in midweek in the league. So, you know, this, I think you could build on this somehow.
No Aubameyang.
No,
you don't need it. We're so good.
No, it's not that. Yeah,
okay,
you're
whatever. Right. Tell me about Guendouzi. All right, enough Arsenal excuses.
Listen,
Guendouzi
had a meeting. He was dropped for the last two games, Southampton and then Sheffield.
What, because of his classy behavior with Neil Mopé?
Okay. Yeah, exactly. For that, I had a chat with Arteta, and I wrote that on the website on Friday, I think it was, Saturday. They don't want to sell him. He doesn't want to go, ideally, but he also wants to play, and he feels that he might not have...
Play in the sandbox or play football?
No, play football.
Oh, okay. Because I wasn't sure because, you know,
there's
a
Euros to come.
That guy.
And he's been called up by Deschamps for the national team. There's an Olympic Games to come as well for his age group, which he could go to as well. He's a key part of that France under 21 team. So, rightly so, to continue improving. I know you don't like him, so
no,
you're
look,
pulling your
I think
eyes.
Everybody deserves a second, that deserves a second chance and a third chance, and he's a kid and whatever. And a lot of young players did very stupid things when they were young. And look, we mentioned Frank Lampard before, and I don't think he minds me saying this. Google Frank Lampard and Cyprus, and you find out that even one of the most, if not the most intelligent English footballer of the last 50 years did something stupid when he was young. However, I guess the reason is I think Arsenal have enough fires to put out elsewhere and enough other issues that there's no reason to cash in on Guendouzi. It's not like people are queuing up to sign him. So you're better off working.
Definitely. Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of that as well. And again, I think Arteta lacks the character and the fire that he has, although he has to control it a bit and mature a bit quicker. As we've mentioned in passing, but talked about plenty last week, Liverpool are champions of England for the first time in 30 years. Gab, what do they do the rest of the season now? No Champions League anymore in August to look forward to. No FA Cup. As we said, they need 15 points from the last 7 games to set a new point record. Is that motivation enough? There's another few unbeaten run at home and that kind of stuff.
All right, I'll tell you right now. For me, I would say if I were, no. I don't care. I care about winning. I don't care about these records.
But
I'm
records
sure
are part of winning, right?
Sorry?
Records are part of winning. You've won the league, but you can do even better than that.
I guess I think the question mark for Liverpool is, are you better off pursuing these records, or are you better off, you know, giving Naby Keita another run in the side to see what he can offer you next season?
Yeah.
Getting Harvey Elliott and Curtis Jones, finding out if these guys can play. I genuinely don't know. I mean, again, what Liverpool have achieved is incredible. I guess players do want to play, but maybe some might also be thinking about their holidays and saying our work here is done, roll on next season.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's an interesting one. I think Klopp is going to, I think he'll be the judge of that, seeing who's in the right frame of mind to continue.
What do you think his mindset would be? Because if he was Pep,
his own mindset is going to be to go and win, right?
To go and beat those records and continue like that.
I think so. I think that's what the club wants. But you have to see, are the players on board with this?
Because
mentally, winning brings such fatigue that, you know, that said, the season they've had, again, 15 points in 7 games, I'm not saying it's going to be a doddle,
but it's
not that difficult for them, frankly.
Especially if you look at the game. I mean, they're still, you know.
Yeah. Inter leave it way too late to beat Parma 2-1, but they do, and they get the 3 points. Jules, this wasn't necessarily a great performance, as Conte made a whole bunch of changes, and Christian Eriksen a bit of a stinker.
Again?
No, not again. Because he played well before that. Not again. Anyway, who cares?
Go on.
Ashraf Hakimi is on his way.
The Messiah.
45 million euros and... no recompra, no Real Madrid right to buy back, which I thought was really weird on Real Madrid's part because they had all the leverage here, right?
But they must really think he can't defend. Otherwise, you don't let him go like this. I mean, okay, let's go back on Ashraf. He cannot defend, right? He cannot defend in the back four. That's why everybody says Lucien Favre, Zinedine Zidane, everybody you're talking to. I remember again seeing him with Dortmund last year against Spurs at Wembley when he made two huge mistakes in a back four that cost them the qualification in a game that they had under control.
It's not like Zidane's necessarily going to be Real Madrid's coach in perpetuity. No. So
you agree? This is a wing back.
He's a wing
this
back.
Not, this is not a right back. He's a wing back.
He's a wing back. And so maybe you can use him as a winger if you play a different system. I don't know.
Okay. But every team who plays with the back four,
I don't have a problem from Real Madrid's perspective in letting him go because you've got Carvajal there. I am surprised he didn't put in a clause. They didn't try. I mean, or maybe they tried, but Inter, didn't, I mean, Inter did well because even if you put in like a 60 million clause, right? To buy him back. If you're willing to buy him back for 60 million, that means he's become really, really, really good, right? From Inter's perspective, you'd still take it because 2 years down the line, you've amortized a big part of his fee and, you know, you're making, 35 million out of it, which isn't bad at all, right?
No, you're right.
I mean, from Inter's perspective, that was brilliant.
Incredible. And I do wonder how much Conte will improve him defensively and then maybe make him into a very good right back in a back four. But even if he doesn't or doesn't get there, in the system of that Conte plays, he's going to be amazing. When you've got Lukaku in the box with Lautaro, if Lautaro stays, or even Alexis Sanchez or whoever else, and you can think about, I don't know, having someone like Eriksen just feeding you the ball into space if you are Hakimi with this space, it's just going to be fantastic.
No, it's
just a shame. I mean, they need to find an equivalent as much as they can on the other hand, because otherwise I can see them just keeping playing on the right-hand side and be a bit more predictable than if they can balance it right and left. But if on the left, you've got, I don't know, no offense, but, you know, someone not as good as Hakimi.
Well, I mean, they've got a range of options. Young, Biragi, I mean, it's...
Victor Moses. I mean, Biragi, really? Yeah,
fair point.
My man, Franck Ribéry, rolled back the years big time to give Fiorentina the lead with a wonderful goal against Lazio. But it wasn't enough as Simone Inzaghi's men came from behind to win 2-1. But Gab, that was never a penalty, was it?
No, it wasn't because Caicedo runs into the goalkeeper.
That was crazy.
Clearly drags his foot.
Spain, yeah. Like, come on.
This is a bad one, and this is one which, you know, let me put it this way. Had this penalty been given to Juve, and as you know, I'm not a Juve fan, people would have talked about this.
They would have been outraged.
From a neutral's perspective, hey, I'm glad they bounced back and they won. I don't think Lazio played that badly, but I do think Fiorentina played well. And Ribery, that was wonderful.
Oh, that was wonderful.
I'm like, how does he do that at that age?
But even
because that was athleticism. That wasn't just technique.
No, that was fantastic. Even late in the game, I thought the acceleration was still there. I mean, he came off eventually, but I thought his first touch was brilliant. And it's good because he had an injury. I think he was very excited to go to Italy and to go to Florence as well. And I'm just so glad to see him at that level. And Luis Alberto, by the way, who scores the winner, who misses the pass completely. It's an easy pass that then bounced back and then he scores it. I mean, it's good because that keeps the title race very much alive, right?
Yeah. Now, from Ribéry to his old buddy, Arjen Robben. He's back, baby!
Take a little break. Groningen, where it all started for him. all those years, what, maybe 20 years ago? Exactly 20 years
even
ago.
Even before PSV.
Yeah, before PSV when he was 16. He's now 36. He's been retired for a year. And he's thinking, do you know what?
He's well rested.
Yeah, and he's like, he's probably watched the Eredivisie and like, I can do this. Idrissi, well, all those wingers, I'm better than that. I can do this. You know, Stang, I can do this. Promise, I can do this. I just can't wait. I just cannot wait to see him in the Eredivisie when he comes back in at the end of August or September.
It's against Eredivisie fullbacks. Who are all just wingers anyway, pretending that they're, imagine
that he changes and doesn't cut off. You know, like, come inside on his left foot and that, you know, the Robin. And imagine even he starts on the left-hand side instead of the right-hand side. I don't know. There's all store. Like, my mind was, when I saw him, my mind was starting to go like, oh my God, this is amazing. Borussia Dortmund have been one of the most exciting teams all season, but it was pretty obvious they could not care less about the final game of the season. Gab, they were beaten 4-0 at home by Hoffenheim and Andre Kramaric, who scored 4 goals. What happened? I mean, does that mean, like, Favre has to go now?
I mean, look, it's an irrelevant game. You don't sack somebody on the basis of an irrelevant game. But it's just my natural attitude is nobody cares. So let's move on. But equally, this is such a capitulation. You could see that they cared because, of course, you know, he made changes later. He brought on Sancho. Yeah. He brought on Hakimi. I think this is pretty embarrassing. I think if the fans had been there, this wouldn't have happened. I think this is a side effect of playing behind closed doors. But I'll tell you what, I think people will remember this because this is just ugly. As for Kramaric, he pads out his statistics against a team that's not interested.
He scored 8 in the league before that game.
And he gets a bonus if he gets 12 goals, or possibly. Yeah. So there we go. Yeah, no, they need to think long and hard about this, I think, Dortmund. Meanwhile, Bayern finished the season with 100 goals, one less than the all-time record. 100 goals in 34 games. That is a ton. And they beat Wolfsburg 4-0. Jules, two questions for you.
Yeah.
What can they improve next season? And who's your player of the year?
They're good questions. I mean, by the way, they finished with 49 points out of 51 in the second half of the season, which I just find it incredible.
It's just insane.
It's just insane. And they were far too good, as we've been saying, for the rest of the league. How can they improve? I still think the two center forwards, or whatever combination they bring there, I think a right back, Pavard, does a job. It could always be better. I think if Kimmich was there, he would be a better right back. But I think you take that. A left back, Alphonso Davies, I think he's there for, you know.
But that's the thing, you can move Kimmich there now. If you start having Pavard issues, can move Kimmich there and, oh no, we only have Thiago Alcantara and Goretzka and Tolisso in the middle of the park.
Yeah, you're right. I just think, okay, Zule was injured for most of the season, Lucas Hernandez, you know, was there and out and back and this and that. I think if they found the right partnership, whether that's Alaba and Lucas Hernandez, although they're two left-footed player, whether that's Sule and Alaba, I don't know, whatever. And if they make
that really solid. Also, Lucas Hernandez play right back?
Right back?
You have right-footed left backs. Yeah, why not a left-footed right back?
It's rarer to have left-footed right back. But maybe, I mean, you could have. Yeah, no. I was going to say, imagine a whole back four of left-footed players, defenders. But
you made a whole team of left-footed players, didn't you?
But yeah, I think for me that's really the only area. Then it depends if Thiago leaves or not, if he stays, and who comes in. If you sign Kai Havertz, if you sign Ndombele, if you sign, you know, all the players they link with, whatever. But defensively, I think for me that's the only one where really they could do better. For the player of the season, that's a really good one. You could go Lewandowski and 34 league goals, which is incredible. Only the two Müllers, like, you know, Dieter and Gerd, I think, beat that in the history of the league, which is incredible. His best season ever. Wow. You could go Thomas Müller, 21 assists.
That's where I'm going because 3 years ago people thought he was done.
Nah, I'm going for Alphonso Davies. I don't care what you're saying. Even if it's just half of the season, come on. Mm-hmm. Give me a break. He's 19. He's out of position. The guy is a monster. He's an absolute monster. And for me, Lewandowski would always score you goals. Okay, Müller, like you said, he's coming back from the dead. He's this and that's great,
man.
But Alphonso, man, come on. And he's one of ours as well. Alphonso, if you're listening. Speaking of final day madness in the Bundesliga, Gab, let's drop into the second division, Hamburg. to get into the playoff and hope to go back into the Bundesliga. They simply needed to better Heidenheim result on the final day of the season. That's it. Heidenheim, sorry for the pronunciation if it's wrong, lost 3-0. Hamburg managed somehow to lose 5-1. Gab, this is historically Germany's second or third biggest club. I mean, come on.
Yeah, I mean, it's three seasons now in the second division. Well, first of all, I got to say this. If you need a result on the last day of the season to get in the playoffs or stay up and avoid relegation, and you lose the way these two teams lose, I don't think Heidenheim should play the playoffs
either.
You know, screw them. I honestly, let's keep Werder Bremen, Josh Sargent. Let's keep them up. But Hamburg, I don't know how this happens. I don't know how, you know, you've got a massive stadium, massive crowds, massive following, a lot of money. This is like, it's almost like they signed some sort of pact with the devil when they passed over. I heard a great story about how they turned down Jurgen Klopp. I mean, obviously, this is years ago.
Yeah.
Because when he turned up, he looked scruffy.
He had ripped jeans.
He had ripped jeans. Yeah. He had scruffy trainers. And he hadn't shaved. And I'm like, wow.
Wow.
And, of course, years later, they brought back Felix Magath. So,
and I think after that, they deserve to be where they are.
Jules, Juve won on Friday against Lecce, and we haven't mentioned Cristiano Ronaldo yet on the show. I know, given how fashion conscious you are, you want to discuss his outfit. Now, this is a picture that he willingly tweeted himself.
Yeah.
I don't even know if he got paid to do it. I hope he got paid, because if you dress up like that, you better get paid, yeah?
So this is a new collection by Louis Vuitton, and it's a short sleeve shirt with the sort of Louis Vuitton sort of logos, if you want, in all colors, the shorts to go with it, and it's disgusting, absolutely disgusting. I mean, I'm a big Louis Vuitton fan, being French and Parisian, of course, and I'm a big Cristiano fan, but that was too much. And he said, I think, something like starting the weekend in style, and everybody, including his own team, are like, no, this is not stylish at all, especially all the Italians who, you know one thing or two about style.
By the way, it's hard for Cristiano Ronaldo to look bad in an outfit, right?
Yeah,
because, you know, he is a handsome guy.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
But this outfit is just hideous, and it completely doesn't suit him.
No.
And I don't know. I just wonder about his handlers.
And obviously, you don't need to spend a lot of money to be stylish, or sometimes you pay a lot to be stylish. But that costs £1,250 for the combo short sleeve shirt shorts, which I think, Cristiano, you got ripped off, my friend. Completely ripped off. I'm sorry, but not everything at Louis Vuitton is stylish.
When it comes to Juve in style, I retweeted a picture of Claudio Marchisio riding his bicycle. That is okay. Admittedly, his bicycle was kind of screwed up, because I think his seat was too low, so that part looked kind of weird. But the way the guy dresses, how handsome he looks, the fact that he's that rarest of rarities, a Juve guy who's actually a warrior of the light, a legitimate one, that is style.
Although, obviously, Andrea Pirlo was also one of them. Come on.
I think Andrea Pirlo, in terms of style, Andrea Pirlo was much more popular outside of Italy. Claudio Marchisio is style when you think Juve.
That's fair enough. But big win for them as well. I mean, Cristiano did really well in that game with a goal and two assists. Gab, good week for American coaches in Europe, too. Pellegrino Matarazzo led Stuttgart back into the Bundesliga. We just talked about Hamburg not making it, while Jesse Marsch won the title in Austria at Salzburg.
Yeah, Jesse Marsch celebrated by spending an hour on the phone with our colleague Tom Hamilton.
Wow, what a great celebration.
His piece is up. Look out for it. Yeah, I have to say, I was unfamiliar with the work of one Pellegrino Matarazzo, who's from New Jersey, but, you know, moved over there, worked his way up through the lower divisions in Germany, and
good on him.
Well done to getting Stuttgart back up. I've heard Stuttgart historically belong in the top flight, but as we see with Hamburg, you know, tough to get them there. Jesse Marsch, it's not just, okay, I'm not impressed with Salzburg stomping all over the league. I am impressed with the performances that they put in against Liverpool and against Napoli in the Champions League, and the fact that they kept going after Erling Haaland left.
And the way he's improving his players, and the latest one is Patson Daka, who's going to be amazing, a striker who's replaced Haaland in the team.
Watford lose to Southampton. They're very much sucked into the relegation race now, and they do it without three guys, Andre Gray, Nathaniel Chalobah, and Dominguez Quina.
Yeah.
Why weren't they there?
Well, it was Andre Gray's birthday. I think he was 29 at the weekend. So he thought, hey, it's a good idea to organize a big party in my house. So you think, okay, no problem for six people, because that's the amount that we allowed by the government here in the UK. You can't have more than six people in a group and still respecting social distancing. He said, well, no, six is not enough for my birthday. So he went and invited 20 people, maybe even more, to the party, and photo and video leaked. And obviously against regulations and restrictions. So Watford were really unhappy with him. Maybe there's other things, you know, I don't know if he'd
I think he'd been playing much lately either. Yeah. But still.
So, yeah, if he'd been Ben Foster, maybe they would have taken a different position. I don't know. But they were clearly unhappy, launched an investigation. And I think it could be very, very tricky now for Gray, Shaloba, as you said, and Quina as well, for the rest of the season.
What really annoys
COVID
me
idiots,
here?
You know, that's what we used to call
COVID
it.
COVID idiots, yeah. COVID, you know what also annoys me here? You have one teammate, Adrian Mariappa, who tested positive, yeah, and who's had the disease. Troy. You have another teammate, Troy Deeney, yeah, who's got, you know, as he told, obviously he came back in the end, but, you know, who's got a child at home, who's got respiratory problems, who sort of explained the whole absurdity, I can't get a haircut, but you want me to play football.
Yeah.
And thirdly, you know when you're married to a pop star,
because
he's married to the girl from Little Mix, right?
Yeah,
fiance, whatever. You know that this is going to end up on social media.
Of course.
I mean.
And then you expect to go the next day at training and see all your friends and then just pretending that nothing happened. I don't know. He got done by his club and deservedly so. Well, finally, Gab, Milan beat Roma 2-0, an inch closer to Europe, although they left it late. But maybe they don't need Ibrahimovic after all, who is obviously still not in the team.
Yeah, Roma made a bunch of changes. Milan capitalized. They looked better. Even Çalhanoğlu, who I've criticized so much in the past, he did his part.
Ante Rebic, who scored again.
Ante Rebic as well. By the way, Frank Kessié in the build-up to that goal, like it's a spectacular overhead kick, which I didn't think he had that in his locker. They've only conceded one goal in their three games back, and you know they've played Roma and Juventus in the, you know, if you count the Coppa Italia in that, okay, and Lecce, who actually scored against them. They're on the up. I don't know what the implications are long term, but, you know, really important for them, I think, to get into the Europa League. Jules, so much going on this week. I suggest we reconvene on Thursday.
Perfect. I'm free Thursday.
Sounds good. Till then, bye bye.